a little bit does go a long way. And I think we often forget that. And with so much uncertainty and like the economic state of things, it can feel like truly what's the point? And there is always a point. A few bucks here and a few bucks there. And then at the end of the year, I had $600 and it really offset the cost of the holidays. And that's fantastic.
That's a good feeling.
It is. Yeah. It gives you that hope back that like there is a point. You should always be lending an amount of money that if you never got repaid, your finances are totally fine. And that will make you less afraid of how and when it comes back and the potential for burned relationships and horrible things that kind of come out of that less. So if you don't think you're going to see it and it's too much money that you feel uncomfortable with, then don't.
Shannon Lee Simmons, she's been in the financial consulting industry for some time. She created the New School of Finance, so we'll find out what that's about. It's a big subject, and with somebody who's involved in finance, I'm curious to see what insights she might have. With her clients, and she's talked to a lot of people, you go into a relationship and you've each had your own patterns, and then you put it together and just expectations, like, you know, it's possible that somebody has just been used to their parents taking care of them and they expect that their spouse is going to take care of them too.
We see people from all walks of life. And because we're fee only, we don't have like investment minimums. So I see people who come in with like $50,000 worth of credit card debt, all the way through to people who have $50,000 sitting in their checking account, everything in between. When I say don't lose hope, it's a lofty thing to say for sure. What I really mean at that is don't give up. Yeah, you're going into debt. Does that mean that you're losing hope in the grand scheme of life? No, because you have a plan for how you're going to get yourself out on the other side. So it's an acknowledgement that things are really, really insane right now. And a permission to just be like, this is wild. And this is not it forever. That's the piece of hope, that it's just right now, this is what's happening to me and it's okay. And I'm going through it. So I have lots of clients who have $10,000 on credit cards and they don't feel like their $100 a month is going to do anything. So why bother? Right. And so what often sitting down and kind of mapping it out can do is say like, okay, well, you know, $100 a month on $10,000, it's probably not going to pay it off dramatically over a 5-month period, but like you could still live your life, do this and be done with it in 3 years. And so, you know, you'll be 40 by then. And like, won't that be a fun 40th birthday present for yourself? So it's like a lot of keeping the hope is not about magic. A lot of it is actually about reframing what's happening, shifting a perspective, and showing the long game is still in play. I think most people just need to know that they're not going to be destitute in retirement in order to feel okay about today's decisions. I don't work in a conventional financial job. So how our business makes money isn't like, oh, off the stock market and people doing this RSP contributions every month and that. Ours is like you pay for the time, right? So if we're financially planning around these micro timelines and with all these new ways that we are changing and all that stuff, then that's okay too. I do believe that like we are worth more than just the number on our bank account. And I do believe that we're going to see that rise of community. And I think we'll see a return to barter and exchange in a way that like is unprecedented in the last like 100 years, for sure.
Hi, Shannon.
Hi there.
This is Ev. She's over in far away on the other side of the big ocean.
Wow.
Nice to see you.
You too. You too. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being with us.
I'm so excited and I'm so glad it finally worked out.
Yeah. So Shannon Lee Simmons. Now, can I call you Shannon?
Yeah, Shannon's great.
Not everybody goes with a middle name or a second name, right?
I know. It's basically it's a more formal version or when I was in trouble as a child. Shannon Lee.
Well, Shannon Lee Simmons is my guest today on Living on Purpose. My name is Lynn Thompson, and I'm really pleased to welcome you. We first connected like 2010 or so when you were doing your Barter Babes project.
Long time ago, yeah.
Do you want to give a little snapshot of yourself?
Sure. So I'm a certified financial planner and a chartered investment manager by trade, so to speak, and degree. The big thing was when what Barter Babes was too, is I used to work on Bay Street in investment management. And then I realized that most people who don't have over $1 million of investable assets didn't at the time, especially, have a place to go to get like unbiased, really, really good financial advice unless they were being sold, you know, mutual funds or something like that. And so I wanted to end that. So I quit my Bay Street job. And for 1 year, I did this project where instead of charging money for unbiased financial planning, I did it for a bartered good or service to try to make financial planning fun and accessible for women in marginalized communities. And then I was always supposed to go back to Bay Street, but I had so much fun doing that project that I just ended up opening the New School of Finance. So now we run a fee-only financial planning service in Canada. And I've been doing that ever since.
Did you say the only?
Sorry, no, we're not the only one anymore. No. But we're definitely one of the largest and we're super affordable. I think that's what really sets us apart is that we're accessible on a financial level as well. And I'm proud that we're just, I feel like we make the money part of life a little bit more fun too.
Yeah, you definitely seem to have fun and you have guitars and a big keyboard painting in behind you.
This is the remote life now, but this is my house. Yeah, my husband plays guitar and I play the piano.
Yeah, I saw a couple of your videos with your piano. That's really, I'm always impressed when people can play and sing or talk at the same time. Okay, so the New School of Finance, this is your company, yes? Yeah. And how long have you been doing that?
So we launched that after Barter Babes, so 2011 or 12. So we're going on 10 years this year, actually, we just had our 10 year, so which has been so, so wonderful. And now we're like a team. There's 9 of us, which is really exciting. And it was really cool to watch it go from just me in my living room to a whole team. And then now it's still just me in my living room, but there's 9 of us that meet remotely.
Funny that.
I know. Cyclical. Life is cyclical.
That's actually kind of cool because you could just imagine that you're still in that first year and yet you're not.
It feels like that though some days because it's me seeing clients and doing my thing like on a day-to-day thing, but it is. So it feels similar, but it's much different now.
And where are you based, Shannon?
I'm in Toronto and that's where we used to have our HQ as well, but we see clients all across Canada.
And where are your 9 people?
All in Toronto as well, because we used to all come in. So we're all still here. Some of us are even neighbors.
Oh, that's great. And how did you find them? Just resonate together or how did it come together?
It's pretty unique, actually. I've realized that as an employer, I have like a unique hiring process. So I'm a really big believer that anyone can learn anything. So you hire the right person and just get out of their way, let them do something awesome, then you'll probably have a successful team. So for example, my first employee ever still works with us. She was a professional ballet dancer for most of her life. So like didn't have any office experience, no financial experience, nothing. However, she had a keen interest in personal finance. She was passionate about on her own and just like a strong work ethic. I mean, she was a ballerina, so you know, she knows how to hustle and work hard. And so she was my first employee that I brought in. Now she's our director of client service. And my first financial planner that I hired was actually a trained teacher to the education system with a keen interest in personal finance versus somebody who, you know, here are my credentials on a piece of paper. So for me, finding them has always been kind of interesting. One person was actually a barter babe from the project that they applied years later. So I usually just hire the people who kind of stand out as like, this is the right fit and we'll make the role work with whatever your strengths are.
Yeah, that's great. And it's fun. I mean, it's so important to have fun, right?
Yeah, it is something I am missing about being in the office. We're very lucky. Our team really liked each other too. I miss the camaraderie of it, but we still do a monthly hang. So that's fun. That still keeps it fun.
Well, that's good. And we've mentioned the Barter Babes project a couple of times, but I think it's important to just review what your inspiration was and how that grew from like one exchange for financial advice. And also looking back on it, if there's something that you would have done differently.
Oh, that's a great question. So, I mean, my initial motivation or passion that kind of drove me in those first years to make these massive life changes and do these really scary things was I've always been a people person, but also I love math and I love plans. Like I make this joke a lot, but it's so true. I was literally a kid that was trying to like scale the lemonade stand. on the street. Like, I was like, all right, we can set up corners here, here, and here. And like, we can like work our economies of scale. Like, I was like 10 and like trying to scale it. So there's a part of me that loves to plan and to sink my teeth into something. I'm a Capricorn, can't help it. I love that. So also making plans for other people is something that even in university, my friends would come to me. We would like plan out how we could like use their OSAP so they don't run out and like all this stuff. So there's always been that draw. When I started working on Bay Street, I thought it was going to scratch that itch, right? And it did to a degree. But what I really missed was the actual problem solving piece. Because when you're working with that level of wealth, a lot of what you're talking about is just how the investments did. And you're basically making a thesis for like, this is why, you know, somebody chose this investment, blah, blah, blah. Whereas the work that I do now as a financial planner and what I was longing for was being like in the trenches with people, like navigating, like, how are you going to pay your bills and start your business? Can you afford to have kids? Can you actually afford to buy a house? Like, can you do that reno? Like, whatever their questions are, like, that to me is real planning. And it just didn't exist in the world. So that was where the passion came from. And I also couldn't believe that if you don't have a lot of money, you couldn't really get that advice, which blew my mind. It was like an injustice thing. So when I quit, I was young enough. I didn't have kids. I didn't have a mortgage. I was like, well, if you're ever going to be broke, this is the time to do it. And then worked my butt off for a very, very, very long time grinding it out. But it was totally worth it because I just couldn't go back to doing the Bay Street thing once I had actually been able to scratch that itch of genuinely helping people and doing what I consider true financial planning, which is like managing cash flow, working through life problems with people. So that was the original kind of motivation. And if I could do anything differently, oh, okay. If I could literally do anything differently, I would have not been so afraid to charge people what the value was from the beginning. So what happened to me was because I did Barter Babes project where I didn't charge anything, because in my mind that was supposed to be 1 year at a Bay Street, and then I was going to go back to this trajectory where I would have been very financially successful that way. And so I saved up enough money. I was totally okay to do that. And then I decided to kind of derail my life plan and stick it out doing fee-only financial planning, which, you know, back then there wasn't a lot of people that did that. It would be, if you would ask somebody what a fee-only financial planner were, they wouldn't have even known what that is. Things are different now. And so I had a really hard time. Again, it was just me in my living room with my cat. I had a really hard time charging a rate that was sustainable because I'd gone from charging nothing or like a lasagna or like whatever, and then trying to charge. And I didn't have anybody else saying, oh my gosh, you're not charging enough. So what ended up happening was those first 3 years, I worked like 80 hours a week I was so broke still, but I was so passionate that I kept going. And because my overhead was low at the time, I could do that. But if I could never have done that at this stage, I have kids, I've got a mortgage, I could never have done that. And it was kind of silly. And I paid for that in a long way because I also set expectations that were unsustainable for myself about how long someone, how many hours a day somebody could actually work. So if I could do it again, I would have been like, future Shannon is not going to be able to keep this clip up for long and you're going to burn out, because I almost threw the whole towel in after 3 years because it was so unsustainable what I was doing. That I almost quit the whole thing and went back to Bay Street and thinking everybody was right, this doesn't work. And then I realized it does work. I just wasn't charging enough. And then when I got my first employee, she was like, you're never allowed to do this again. And leave that with me. And I'm going to do that. And then everything's worked ever since. So she's really saved the business.
Well, and I think being a financial planner person, you need to walk your talk. I mean, you need to know how to do it.
I know. And isn't that funny? So it was always a do what I say, not as I do thing. And I was talking about that with some of my team members, like later on when we were reflecting back. And sometimes you take for granted what you're good at, right? So for me, if I'm seeing someone, I'm like, well, this is kind of second nature to me. How can I charge for this? You know, at the time I was also mid-20s. So keep that in mind too, right? I was like, there's like a self-worth thing. There's an insecurity thing there that now in my late 30s, I'm like, oh, Shannon, what were you thinking? But yeah, it took someone else to give me that confidence to be able to do it. So I didn't end up quitting. And it's interesting now when I talk to other clients who are doing maybe not the same work as me, but they're doing work that they're charging for, I have no problem warning them about that. And like setting expectations with intention and like setting prices with purpose and doing it on purpose so that later on, you don't have to clean up the mess you might've made by doing it by default.
Hey, well, totally appropriate that you're on Living on Purpose.
Go. I was charging by default, not by purpose. And then I was living by default and not by purpose. And now I'm in a much better place. I feel like I'm living on purpose for real.
Well, that's awesome. And congratulations on your children and marriage and house. And
been a busy decade.
Yeah, lots has happened since we first touched base. Okay, so when you were a child, did you have an allowance? Were you taught how to manage money?
I didn't have an allowance, but I absolutely had a front seat into financial planning. My parents own a small business. And so when you have a family business, if anyone's listening to this that grew up in a family business or has one, you know, the dinner table conversation is about like the business and what's going on, and you're all kind of a part of it. So, you know, from a very young age, I knew that there were years where things were financially okay. And I knew that there were times when things were lean, and my parents brought me into that conversation, and it didn't freak me out because it actually really formed my relationship with money that like, it's a tool. And like, sometimes you're up and sometimes you're down. It doesn't define success. It also gave me faith that if things are kind of tight or down, that doesn't mean that this is it forever. So there's like that, you don't necessarily fall into scarcity mindset and start spiraling. And also the perspective of when times are good, you know, you make hay while the sun is shining. This also may not last forever. So be careful. So don't like, oh, banner year, this is my life now. And then, you know, you inflate your life costs and all that stuff. So really having open and honest conversations with my parents and family about money made it a thing that didn't scare me, because it wasn't like, there's no money, there's not enough money. It wasn't that at all. It was actually the ebb and flow of money and being really business about it that allowed me to detach my self-worth from money, which I think is a lesson that has proved me really well. We also, my family, the original family business ended up in bankruptcy when I was 10. We actually had like a car towed out of our driveway. It was very upsetting. And that also, I think, was like a very good learning time for me, because my family, we banded together and we rebuilt the second business, and it's still going today. And it's like, I really saw my parents work their butt off for us and gave me that confidence that like, you can be at the bottom and the game is not done. You can absolutely rebuild. And like, I think that that has just been such a healthy way to look at money, is that it's not about worth and stuff doesn't matter. I had that lesson really early in my life. It's been a good one as I kind of navigated self-employment myself.
Wow, that's really an awesome background and story, Shannon. Thank you for sharing that. It makes me think that your parents, they figured something out, because I think a lot of couples, as you've probably discovered, are really challenged by finances. It's got to be one of the main reasons that people are challenged in their marriages.
Totally. I see it all the time with clients. Because it was a small business, I think that was the difference, is that it felt like we were a team against the world, versus if you have two people who have jobs and money's tight, you feel like you don't have control over it. Whereas if it's a small business, okay, things are tight, what are we going to do about it? It's like a shift in perspective that allows things to be possible and growth to be possible, versus if you feel like two employees and things are tight, you feel stuck, which is not necessarily the case, but that's the perspective, right? And then my parents didn't fight about money because it was both of them together in the trenches. Like, it wasn't one versus the other. Even when we lost everything, there was tight times. And it was really, I remember a lot from that time, and like a lot of things like that are just so fishing out loonies out of my piggy bank for gas money. That's a real thing that happened. And so we had these really hard times, but then like things in the next 3 years were, they felt normal again. And so again, it's that teamwork and like not crumbling under that pressure that I think really changed my relationship with money forever.
That is definitely an impact that you had. Okay. So I'm just looking back over that span of your few dozen years. What do you think has happened since you were young? And I mean, I love the piece about the feeling of anything is possible rather than feeling stuck because you're hooked up with an employer. You're really dependent on somebody for your destiny, you know, rather than feeling and believing. And like as a child, seeing that demonstrated that you have options and that you can make something happen. So what I'm wanting to come around to is the current state of the economics in the world, and then therefore in our lives, and what kind of certainty has there ever been, and what might people even have now? And are you finding you're having different conversations with your clients?
The The main thing that I would say has shifted around focus-wise is that there's so much uncertainty. You nailed it. So even when I used to do this on Bay Street, like 12 years ago or 15 years ago, you'd make a retirement plan and you would plunk in the assumptions. Someone's going to live this long. They're going to have these pensions. They're going to work till then. And then this is what they're going to get in the stock market, blah, blah, blah. Now, you know, I find that I'm using these like really short timelines with people, even though it's a retirement plan, we're really just focusing on the next 5 years, because really we can only control what's happening potentially for the next 5 years. We don't really know what's going to look like 10 years from now. Climate change is really coming up in my retirement sessions. There's a lot of conversation around like what happens then, which nobody knows. And I also find that the rise of the gig economy and people not necessarily having one employer for life, bouncing around. There are periods of high and periods of low. So something that I really see a lot of is people getting to, you know, in their peak earning years, like 45, 50, 55, and then maybe they get laid off and they can't replace that income, but they're still working, but it's at half the amount. And how does that impact the whole plan? So, and again, this is what I think is so exciting about what I do versus, you know, the kind of the standard that it was before, is like, I get to pivot plans with people to be truly actually helping over the next 5 years. I often think like it's kind of like a roadmap between, you know, St. John's, Newfoundland to like Victoria, BC. And of course, we're all headed across the country, but each province is going to give you your own stuff, that all these things are going to happen to you. And you need a plan for each stretch of road to make sure that if you get a flat tire, you're okay. Like maybe you want to go off course in Saskatchewan, like who knows what you want to do. So like you kind of need these like micro plans, even though we're drawing a line across the map, it's going to look different everywhere you go. And I really find the uncertainty in the economy and the global scale with the pandemic and rising inflation and a bunch of uncertainty about what the long-term looks like. Each one of those micro plans now, there's a lot of different financial tools that we have to use, and we don't really know how the next little bit's going to go out. And so how do you make financial plans with uncertainty is kind of a thing that I'm doing now.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. And I'm sure people are coming to you probably with different information and questions. One of my listeners was wondering about Bitcoin and silver and gold and, you know, not so much as investing, but just having an alternative to money in the bank. We've just been set up with this idea of having money in the bank and focusing our self-worth on that number. And what happens when you think, well, maybe I can't trust the bank? And how does that change everything that we've been taught?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm not saying I don't trust the bank. What I'm saying is there's skepticism now in a way that I just didn't see 15 years ago. And there are options now that just didn't exist 15 years ago. And so I think now more than ever, this is going to sound a little bit trite, but like having a financial plan is important, but having the right kind. So not having one of those 40-page documents that just draws a line across the map. Like I'm talking about someone who can like help each person with their own stuff. Because if you can go to the internet and Google a bunch of stuff, but like your situation is different than mine, is different than your neighbor's, is different from whoever. And I think more than ever, we need something custom, because everyone's situation is so different and the constraints are so different and the uncertainties and fears that each person is feeling these days is very unique and personal.
For sure. You're not giving any specific advice, like you're saying. It's for each of us to discern what's going to feel best. I mean, that's the thing. Even as I said that, I'm realizing, yes, you are seen as an expert because you've had experience. You're in this field. At the same time, me as a potential client or anyone else, we still have to resonate with what's true for us.
You bet. Yep. The big sweeping advice that you can give people is like looking at those shorter time. When you're making a financial plan, don't be afraid if it's only for the next year. That's okay. I think really changing the lens to a shorter timeline is really important. Number one. Number two, don't get frozen and do nothing. I think that's the number one fear here about mounting anxiety and uncertainty in the world. Most people are like, you know, that old saying, like when in doubt, do nothing. I think that is the worst case scenario here. And there's so much doubt that it's really easy to just do nothing. And then life is still going to clip by. And even though we don't know what that's going to look like down the road, doing nothing can't be a great thing. So I always say do something. So for a short period of time, focus on that. We know what the next 12 months looks like. Cool. We know what the next 12 days looks like, whatever that time horizon is, like focus on that and do anything that you can. Something is better than nothing. And I think the other piece is like not to lose hope. That sounds silly, but when you think that there's not a point to something or nothing that you do is going to make a big difference, that also leads to not only nothing, but it also can lead to like some self-sabotaging behavior, right? Like, so, oh, well, there's no point in this. So screw it. I'll just do whatever. And then you end up in a bigger, more anxious mess than you would have been if you just even did nothing at all. So I think keeping hope is really important. That's where I think that that plan can come in, is like, even if it's only over 12 months, really seeing what's possible over a 12-month period. And it is personal. So some people, I just got off the call with a client and they're just up against the wall right now. They're on a mat leave. Then the partner just got laid off because of the lockdown restrictions here. And it's just a nightmare. And like, you know what? Their job right now is to only go into debt by $500 a month. That's the goal. And isn't that crazy that that's the plan? But here's the difference. Without that number, so this allows a little bit, it's like, okay, so at the end of this 12 months, you might have $6,000 owing, and here's how we'll pay that back in the next year. And like, this isn't going to sink your retirement. This isn't going to screw you for life. This is a short-term emergency, and like, it's okay. So what it does is it gives back a sense of control, and it gives back a sense of like, okay, well, we're not just going to spiral, because what was happening was they were just spiraling way more into debt than that, because they were like, well, we're screwed. So whatever, like they just get through in the towel. And so now being like giving almost like that permission to do it as a controlled burn, instead of just like everything's on fire, really put the reins back in their hands. And it feels like it's a permission to go into debt, but in a controlled way that they know they can handle on the other side. So they don't have to wake up and panic or throw the towel in. So, you know, and you're not going to find a financial planner on the internet that's going to tell you to go into debt, because it's like not a thing you want to hang your hat on. But like, it really becomes personal. And I think that's where that last piece of hope can come from, making sure that it's personalized to you.
Yeah. So I've heard that there's good debt and bad debt.
Yeah. The textbook good debt is like, if it's attached to an asset, we don't really consider that the quote bad debt. So like a mortgage, for example, try buying a house without a mortgage these days. I can't even imagine any, you know, $1 million liquid is pretty crazy. So I think a mortgage or even a car loan, I would argue, is like a type of debt that I can get behind. I wouldn't have somebody lose sleep over it, unless you're like hurtling towards retirement and you still have a major mortgage. Well, that's a different conversation. But the type of debt that is really anxiety inducing from a financial point of view, but also an emotional point of view, credit card debt, obviously, or lines of credit. If you have student debt, nowadays you kind of have to go to school. So that's also, I almost think like it's a down payment on your brain.
Down payment on your brain. Do you do anything with wills and estate planning at all?
Not really. We usually will send people.
You'll outsource that. Yeah. I saw on one of your videos, you had a coin collector that you couldn't get your hand into.
Yeah. It's actually a vase that sits at the front door. I still have it.
Still have it?
Yeah. I'll get it. Hold on.
Oh, look at that.
Babies many years later.
Wow. That's amazing.
It. So it's really actually a fun thing. I just come in and I empty my pockets and I just dump spare change in there all the time. And I can't get my hand in. My kids think it's fancy. They don't even know that there's anything in there. And last year it had like $600 in it that we used that at Christmas time. And it was just like such a nice bonus. It was so cool because it feels free, because it just came from like the toonie here, the loonie there, the whatever, with the money just rolling around in your pocket. So I made a habit to always empty, both my husband and I, we always empty our pockets into the vase. And it's been there for like literally 11 to 12 years.
Yes. And that's the video that I saw, that you had it there in the TV studio.
Right there.
That is actually such a cool example, right? I love that, because you can just see how that adds up, a loonie or a toonie at a time, or, you know, $5 bill, and how it can subtract the other direction, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's like a really fun one, but like really just like a little bit does go a long way. And I think we often forget that. And with so much uncertainty and like the economic state of things, it can feel like truly what's the point? And there is always a point. A few bucks here and a few bucks there. And then at the end of the year, I had $600 and it really offset the cost of the holidays. And that's fantastic.
That's a good feeling.
It is. Yeah. It gives you that hope back that like there is a point.
You want to feel that good feeling right in your core, right?
Yeah.
If you can make that your guiding light in each financial decision, each transaction, how do I feel paying with credit or debit or cash? And which is going to make me feel better later too, right?
Yes, I think that's an important piece too, is how do I feel about it tomorrow?
Hey, one of the things that you said is about loaning money to friends or family.
Ooh, always spicy. So I know a lot of people want to do this. Typically, I think that it happens a lot with purchasing a home. I see a lot from parents to their younger or like adult children. And I don't think there's any problem with lending money to friends and family as long as everyone's really upfront with what the terms are. Is it a gift? Is it a loan? And if it is a loan, let's be really, really specific about what the expectations are for repayment for both people. Because when that ends badly is when people have been wishy-washy about what their expectations are or what they're able to do. So a classic example is like the parents' gift, you know, $20,000 for the purchase of a home, and they don't really think it's a gift, but they say things like, get me when you can. Well, this is such a nebulous space. So then the kids are like, okay, coming up with 20 grand is a hard thing to do, especially after you buy a house and then, you know, the cost of living. So then, and then all of a sudden Thanksgiving is awkward because the kids went on a vacation and the parents are like, whoa, you still owe us $20,000. Why are you spending 5,000 bucks on a vacation? Like, this is where it gets awkward. So like, was it a gift? Is it a loan? Don't say get us when you can. If you do say get us when you can, like, you're asking for people to feel uncomfortable. So what I often suggest, just set the perimeter. Like, if I'm not paid back that $20,000 or whatever that is in 5 years, I'll be really frustrated. I don't care when it comes in the next 5 years. I don't care if it comes in chunks. I don't care if it comes when you renew your mortgage. I don't care. But if it's after, I'll be really frustrated. So then the other people, they can go on this vacation without guilt because they know that they still have 3 or 4 years until that's actually due. So just having that one piece of dialogue can just make Thanksgiving less awkward for everybody.
Well, it's a really good idea. And I suppose it's like anything to give or invest or whatever that you can afford.
Yes. Thank you for bringing that point up. That is a very important piece from the lender's point of view. You should always be lending an amount of money that if you never got repaid, your finances are totally fine. And that will make you less afraid of how and when it comes back and the potential for burned relationships and horrible things that kind of come out of that less. So on a smaller scale, let's say that a friend is tight for rent or something like that, and they need help and you'd like to help. Don't liquidate your entire emergency account because then you're in a pickle, but, you know, helping out to a degree with what it is that you feel like, okay, if I never saw this again, or it didn't come back for 10 months, am I still okay? And then, so you can lend that money or give that money. And if you lend it, just make sure that you're like, cool, you're in a tight squeeze right now. Maybe this comes back by the end of the calendar year, or like, maybe this comes back on your next paycheck. If that's what you're expecting, you need to communicate it or else you're asking for conflict.
Yeah, for sure.
Don't lend it then. If you don't think you're going to see it and it's too much money that you feel uncomfortable with, then don't lend it.
Well, there's sort of that blend, right? Of overextending, feeling that you're overextending. Yeah. And also, I mean, the fact that you could be enabling that person because you're like, I remember my parents not wanting to over help me, you know, yeah. Because I wouldn't build that muscle myself. Right.
Yeah. I think that's a fine line too, between like a bailout of an emergency situation versus it becoming like kind of like a crutch. And I think people often are super afraid of that happening. So my advice usually there is like, you know, if it happens once, everyone gets in a pickle every now and then, like life happens, right? If it's something that sort of is like this becoming this consistent thing, that's like mm-hmm. every time this happens, this or whatever, that's when you need to just shut it down. Because at that point, you are potentially putting yourself in a financial situation where you'll become super resentful. And then as soon as resentment creeps in, the relationship's over.
It's no fun at all.
No, everyone's having a bad time. Yeah. As far as the financial stuff goes, you know, I already said this, but just like finding a way to feel hope, I think is like the key thing. If you can feel hope, even for a small amount of time, and keeping your goals like manageable and realistic. So one of the things that really blows hope up is, I see this a lot with like, debt repayment plans, you know, at 3 a.m. you're Googling and then you're like, I won't eat out for a year. I won't buy a piece of clothing for a year. I will eat beans and all these like really intense restrictions for yourself in order to have this, like all your debt paid off in 3 months or all of it gone in 4 months. And that works for like a week. And then it's completely unsustainable. And then you fail. This will rob you of hope that you are capable of money. And you just made a plan that was so unrealistic. So the other thing that I often say is like, just keep things realistic. So like, maybe you won't have that debt paid off for 1.5 years or 2 years, but you can actually make a dent in it rather than constantly yo-yoing back and forth, feeling like a failure. Because as soon as you start to believe that you're bad with money or that you're a financial failure, the whole screw it mentality just takes over, right? Like, why try? So don't do that to yourself. Just you can only do $50, do $50. It's better than nothing. Don't try to do 500 when you're just going to end up putting $500 on it and then taking it back out again every month and feeling like you can't do it.
Mentally, it's really important how we talk and think about the money and whether we're taking it personally. Like it's a reflection of who we are as souls on the planet. You know, if you have a tiny pension, if you keep saying I have a tiny pension, it will remain a tiny amount of funds that you have available, right?
Yes. What we say and how we talk about money, all the time, it's become self-fulfilling prophecy for sure. Our words are so important, and how we speak about our relationship with money is so tied to what we believe about it. The scarcity mindset that shows up when you feel like you don't have enough. There are definitely situations where someone does not have enough, and that is a different set of financial planning. I'm talking about someone who has their basic life needs met, like security needs met, but is feeling like there's not enough to live the life that they want to live, right? Like, or that their life would be better if they just had a little bit more money. If you find yourself, I mean, we all daydream about that, but I mean, if you find yourself really being dragged down by that thought process, I would say that you're risking kind of circling the drain as far as being in scarcity mindset all the time. And like, there's a lack of hope there for sure. And then you might actually be in a situation where you're making it harder than it is because you're just like, screw it, I don't care anymore.
When you get dollar bills and you don't put it into your I can't reach into it container, do you line them up in your wallet or do you stuff them in your pocket?
Stuff them. Stuff them. I am organized chaos. People will be shocked. I am not organized in that way. I am organized in like this life way, but not in like the day-to-day stuff. You should see the big joke with my team. It's like, you don't open Shannon's drawers because you'll be horrified. And it's like, I know what's in there, but my house is clean, but my drawers, woo, no. And my wallet, stuff, like my purse, just like receipts and bills and raisin snacks for my children. That's what you'll find there.
The only reason we can talk today is because your children are back in school. Is that right?
Yes, they are. I am no longer a remote kindergarten teacher, and I am very happy about that.
Well, congratulations. Please thank your children for allowing us to get together today.
Absolutely. I absolutely will. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome, and thank you.
Keeping the hope is like, there's a long-term game here at play. Like, think about that map. So just because your car breaks down in Manitoba, it doesn't mean you're not going to go to Victoria. You're going to get there. You're just going to be late. Like, whatever. And these next few days here are going to be really hard. And I don't know what we're going to do, but you're going to get there at some point. The uncertainty is really about not actually thinking about Victoria, to keep the analogy going, thinking about Manitoba, right? You don't even know what's coming down the pipeline. So exactly. Let's focus on a plan to get our car back on the road, and we don't think about anything beyond that. And if we can feel like we have a little bit of control over this micro timeline, maybe we can figure something out. You can extend that all the way through to all of financial planning. So you've just been laid off and life is so crazy right now. Focus on the next month. Don't even think about next year, because who knows? And you're just going to make yourself anxious, you know?
Yeah, being in the moment. We've only got the moment anyway. And anything else that's causing us anxiety is because we're caught in the past or worrying about the future. So that is where our peace lies. And the other thing is your Barter Babes project, to come back to how we connected, Shannon, is that I think that that is like really important to keep a sense of the value of our services, the value of things that we have, the way that we can interact with each other and feel like we're not at a loss. You know, there's always something that we can contribute and that we can ask somebody else for, so that we can both be giving and receiving. And I think that is probably a big part of how we're going to be moving forward, is just keeping an eye on that value, that it's not all about money or currency or whatever this system of exchange that we've been using. There's other ways. Definitely challenging. Definitely the skill to be able to pivot. Yes. And what's your sense in this moment of living on purpose?
Living on purpose, I think it's kind of a balance between feeling like you have a purpose. I think that that's really important, to feel like you're actually doing something that it doesn't have to be life altering, but it's meaningful to you. I think that that's like a really important way to like get out of bed in the morning, and like capitalism isn't driving that. So we got to make sure that there's like a something that's there for you. And also just making sure that I always want to check in and make sure that I have balance in my life. I love and hate the term work-life balance, but how I do it is like on a day-to-day, I'm not like, what was my work-life balance today? Because some days are insane and some of them aren't. I kind of like to reflect over like at the end of the year, I usually do this. And it's like, did I have balance in 2021? Like, did I do the things that I wanted to? Did I set an intention at the beginning of the year? Did I manage to do that? So living on purpose to me is like, it really is cyclical. And I tend to go with the calendar year. I kind of set these intentions at the beginning of the year, not New Year's resolutions, just like things I want to make sure I do this year. Like this year, I want to make sure that my family and I go away to a family vacation, like a cottage for like a week. Like if I will be disappointed if we don't do that at the end of the year. And like, I would love to redo the website for the company. Like I have these like project-based intentions that I'd like to do. And then, you know, come December, I'll reflect back at my list and say, you know, was I able to do that? And what I do with intention there is not just build goals, because I think goals are, you can over-goal yourself. I try to build balance into my intention. So it's like taking vacation, not answering my email after 5 p.m., not working on the weekend anymore, like all of those things. And like then reflecting back and making sure that I managed to balance all the things that I'm juggling.
Well, thank you. That was a great answer for a spontaneous question. So Shannon, what's the best way to get hold of you?
The website is newschoolofinance.com. And then it's got all the books are there, social media, all the online courses, and also like the actual financial planning services that we do. Everything is there from that like one hub. So that's the best place.